Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
High fly ball. Deep left field. At the wall, leaping. Can't find the ball, can you? It's in the seats. That's why. It's gone. Shaw went up. And then he turned around real quick like somebody took it out of his glove or he didn't know what happened. But it was in.
That was Uncle Teddy calling Franmil Reyes' two-run shot yesterday. And, by the way, you're listening to Gwynn and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, and we are lucky enough to be joined by Padres GM A.J. Preller. A.J., how you doing today?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. Dude, I know, understand you kind of getting over a little bit of cold here.
Yeah, it sounds like it's something that's been going around the clubhouse a little bit. Yeah, so mine hasn't been as bad as some of the other guys.
Yeah, well, they're around each other all the time, so yeah. It's just passing back and forth. You got to be pretty excited, especially what you've seen from your corner guys the last month and a half. Hunter Renfro, Franmil Reyes, I've been really impressed, especially with Hunter. I mean, I've felt all year long his strike zone discipline has been much better compared to last year, but he wasn't getting the results. Now all of a sudden, he's getting the results. Franmil Reyes, I like the way he makes adjustments at bat to at bat. You got to be pretty excited about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, like you said, both guys, they've come up here over the last few months and we've seen adjustments. Franmil really coming from the first time he was up, in the big leagues, he went back and, I know Andy and Matt Stairs and the group talked to him about getting a little shorter and, kind of controlling the leg kick a little bit more. And obviously he's come back up and really in the last few months been one of the better offensive players, probably in our whole league, honestly, but definitely on our club. And then Hunter, I think, a similar way. I think he's kind of teased everybody over the course of the last few years with, the big power, the big throwing arm, some tools, and that consistency I think we're starting to see day in, day out. I think he's starting to understand, even sitting down talking to him a little bit yesterday, hearing him talk to Andy, starting to understand like what people are trying to do to him, what he needs to do offensively. I think he's made some adjustments too, and it's the name of the game, and those guys, they look like they're going to be a part of some things.
AJ, tell us a little bit about when you first saw Franmil Reyes, because I know my reaction when I first saw Franmil Reyes. It was, wow, look at this guy.
Right.
I'm curious, as a baseball general manager, when you first caught wind of him, what your thoughts were, and take us through a little bit how he wound up in the Padres organization, because it wasn't just a straight shot. Was it?
Yeah, Franmil actually was a July 2nd sign. Randy Smith and Felix Feliz, doing the international scouting. The time I was with the Texas Rangers, the first time I really saw him, he was a high profile, player, kind of the international market down in the Dominican. Now you kind of know who the group of the top, the top players for that next year's class are going to be, and he was one of the guys. It was obviously his calling card was his power. I think didn't take a genius to go out on the field and see that this guy, 15, 16 year old player, he had well above average power and real power potential. And then I think the quality of hitter has really come in the last few years. I think for me, like going out last year to AA and watching their club play, he was you kind of knew Luis Urias, what you were going to get out of him, some of the other bats there in that AA lineup. But Franmil was the guy that kind of left there saying these are real at bats every single day, and I think he's that's translated here to the big league level. So it always helps, I think, when you have a little bit of history, haven't seen a guy from the time they're 15, 16 years old, a few years ago. But I think Randy Smith, Felix Feliz, that group did a really nice job signing a player that his bat has continued to develop, and he's got I think he's an energetic personality, a fun guy to be around. It's been a nice story for us in the second half.
We're talking to A.J. Preller, GM for the San Diego Padres. we're talking about Franmil Reyes, and to my recollection, he wasn't like one of the names that was being talked about a lot during spring training. So when you get a guy who actually kind of, pushes up on some of the other prospects, I would assume that helps the growth a little bit faster, the whole turning around the organization happened a little bit faster the more guys you get like that.
Yeah, I think in really any situation you look up and there's usually a few surprises. That I think overall you know, I think we try to talk about players can come from anywhere, and it's, you know, not necessarily the guys that, you know, maybe the publications or even internally, maybe you have valued as the top guys, et cetera. I think, you know, the goal for us that we've talked about all the time is just get as many interesting players as possible, guys that have plus tools, guys that have, you know, real makeup and real intangibles. And, you know, you're never quite sure who's going to be the guy that's going to really pop through. But I think when you create a culture with some competition and some guys that are that have some talent, you know, you start seeing some guys, you know, that break through. Framiel was like that, you know, overall, you know, spring training. Went out and had he was part of that group early in spring. We were putting up a lot of runs and having really quality at-bats. He was doing that. I think he ended up getting hurt. I can't remember, sliding into a bag or something like that in spring training. So then his spring got cut short, but opened some eyes up there, took it into El Paso where he had a huge first month or so, and has made the most of his opportunity here this year.
How fun has September been for you, AJ, because you kind of knew a lot of this stuff before we did, you know, and you got to see Mejia, you got to see Urias, you got to see Framil, and the rest of these young guys play. We just heard about how good they were. And then, of course, they come up, and, I mean, I will never forget Urias's first defensive play, like ever. Like, that play will live on for me. And then Mejia, of course, his first game, hits two home runs. But you know it's a long grind for both guys. They still got a long way to go. But how much pleasure are you taking in the fact that we're now all getting to share in what you kind of have known all along?
Yeah, I think it's you know, I think it's nice that the you know, I think the fan base have been probably hearing about some younger players and you know, hopefully a good farm system and, you know, what we're trying to do from a planning standpoint of the next few years. And I think, you know, to you know, for the fans to be able to see it and see some guys that have come up and, you know, and performed, whether it's in certain cases pretty consistently, in other cases to show a flash here and there, what we think guys can do, hopefully it's just the start of it, you know. And I think from our standpoint, I think that's the exciting part, is, you know, not really hanging our hat on just one player. It's like, you know, in baseball, you got to have a quality team, you got to have a lot of depth. And, you know, you look up and, you know, if it's not Luis Urias, it's Framil Reyes. If it's not Framil, it's Francisco Mejia, hopefully down the road with some of the guys we have that will be coming up next year. And, you know, I think you know, that's how we've designed it. And hopefully that's what we start seeing here going forward. And we've got a little bit of a taste of that here in September.
Andy talks a lot about depth. You've already mentioned it in this short interview that we've had thus far. You look at the catching position. You have two top-notch catchers there. How has the experiment, I guess it's an experiment because he wasn't doing a lot of it in Cleveland, how have you guys felt about Mejia actually behind the dish receiving and, you know, a lot of the defensive stuff that he was kind of, it was a knock on him about?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, our scouting group, you know, Dave Poe, Spencer Graham, Pete Dion, the guys that saw Francisco before the trade, they kept coming back to that, you know, they think he's a chance to be a good defensive catcher. And, you know, I think the glimpse of what we've seen so far, I feel like he's done a nice job behind the plate. Obviously, the throwing arm is special. It's
right.
Elite. You know, it's you know, probably the minute, and I think we talked about the minute he steps here, foot here in Petco in the major leagues, probably has the best throwing arm in the game, or
right.
Up there with, you know, with the top catchers in the game. And it's not a long release. He's got a short release, and I think that's played in some of these games. You know, the throw out of the runner trying to advance to second base.
Yeah, the ball kicked away. Yeah,
you know, play trying to, you know, maybe on one of the, you know, one of the plays a few days ago, we ended up throwing out a runner at third base and kind of a transfer play. But you know, he's got weapons behind the dish for us. And I think you know, I think in general, you design it where, you know, hopefully that position is going to be strong for us with Austin and the way he's played the last few months, which is, you know, which has been really nice to see. And then you know, Mejia, you know, to me, like, you know, over the course of the last few weeks, saw some, you know, stat on the broadcast last night that it had been, you know, maybe the most productive tandem or most productive, you know, catching spot of, you know, of any of the National League teams or maybe any of the big league teams over the last 3 weeks or so. If we can get that through the course of a full season,
got,
you know, we're in business as we develop two young catchers. So
you talked about things have to kind of happen that maybe you don't 100% expect to happen. I know, I'm sure when you signed Freddie Galvis, you wanted him to come in here and be an excellent shortstop for you. And he's been that, but I think he's been more. And I think, to a certain extent, he surprised us, not with his numbers, but just with his overall play defensively, his leadership, his love for the game. Has he changed your thinking about him moving forward from where it might have been when you first signed him?
And I mean, honestly, he was one of those guys that, like, you know, what our group talked about when we talked about the different options in the offseason, it was pretty much dead on in terms of, you know, obviously the defensive ability and the, you know, ability to make plays and body control plays and, you know, you want the ball hit to him really in any spot, any situation, some of the big hits he's gotten for us. But, you know, I think, like, the makeup component, the leadership component, again, that's having history. Don Welke, you know, with us in our front office, he was a guy that basically signed Freddie, you know, with the Phillies. and then obviously having Matt Stairs and some other guys that had some connection. Everybody, when we talked, this offseason, Pete DeYoung, our pro scouting director, does a ton of homework when we go to make these trades, and it was repeatedly, he's a winner. You know, he's a winning baseball player. He's a guy that's going to make a difference on the field, in your clubhouse, being around, different players, and then every single night, most importantly, between the lines. And, for us, I think he's been that guy here this year.
Let me ask you this, AJ. By the way, we're talking with AJ Preller, the GM for the San Diego Padres. This first wave that came up was pretty evenly scaled. I mean, you had some outfielders, you had some starting pitchers, you had some bullpen guys, catcher. The second wave that's coming, is it going to be as even across the board, or is it going to be, from what we're hearing, it's pretty heavy pitching as well? What's that second wave going to look like?
Yeah, I hope it's a consistent theme that's just constant pitching that continues to be dumped in, because I think times on that mound, how many times you have to you go through some pitching to get a few guys that are real championship caliber guys. So I do think that'll be a consistent theme. I think we feel like we have depth, and we built depth throughout the whole organization. We definitely talk a lot about up the middle, and we have some catching depth now. I think in terms of some guys that were at the Double A level this year, Fernando Tatis, Chris Paddock, Josh Naylor, so you have some different mix in there. Austin Allen behind the plate, et cetera, and then behind them, another position player group that was in Fort Wayne / Elsinore this year that for age for level and some different things performed pretty well this year. So
it sounds like there's a few waves coming.
Yeah, I think I think that's for us, that's the part that we get excited about, is it's not just built on one player, one guy. I think we feel like we have, internally we feel like we have a bunch of options here in the next few years, and that's going to be a big story. It's going to be how exactly we play that out, whether we use some of that depth for trades, whether we, we're able to truly develop plus position players and plus pitchers here in San Diego. We feel like we've got the makings of it. Now we've got to continue to push forward with it.
I kind of wish I could just be your assistant for the next couple of years, because you've got a lot of cards right now to play, and that's a fun place to be, and I just love what I've seen. I know I'm pretty fans do too, and we can't wait for next year. Last question for me, AJ, and maybe the answer to this is zero, you haven't thought about it at all, or maybe the answer to this is I always think about this. Do you in your mind or somewhere in your office have it written down what you foresee the 2019 lineup looking like, or is that way too far ahead for you to even consider yourself with that yet?
Yeah, that's pretty much every single day.
I think every single day, okay. I wasn't sure which side it would be on.
Yeah, have that diamond run up either in the office or in the notebook, and then redo it, do it again, do it with this adjustment, throw it around the room. So that's probably a pretty daily occurrence. It's kind of like this is where, and I think the nice part for us is a few years ago there were a lot of empty spots on there in terms of guys that we felt like were definite contributors for down the road. I think now it's, you're starting to get 2-3 deep where you're like, okay, I could see it going this way or that way, et cetera. So, that's definitely a daily occurrence. I think, the way the off season works, we'll once October comes, we'll start to season ends and we'll start to kick it off with some pro scouting meetings, some coaching staff meetings, and start talking about, free agent trade possibilities, our own guys, who we think are going to step up, et cetera. And that really starts to kind of outline exactly where we're at. But that's definitely a daily occurrence for us.
Interesting. All right. Well, AJ, thanks so much as always for the time. We caught up with you in New York at Citi Field. We got you here at Petco Park. You name the place for the next next interview, and Tony and I will be there. But continued good luck, and thanks for stopping by, and I'm sure all the Padre fans appreciate hearing from you.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
right.
AJ.
There's AJ Preller, the general manager of the San Diego Padres. Look, it's exciting right now. I mean, I want the future now, Tony.
Yeah,
you know how impatient I've been. Tony's told me all year, be patient, but I'm still
patience
impatient.
Is a tough thing to get your mind wrapped around.
I know, but it's not as hard to be patient when you see what you're seeing.
Right,
and that was
my point. When we started the second half of the season, it's like, as a fan, try to focus on the development of the players as opposed to wins and losses. I know we all want to win, we want wins, but ultimately you're going to be frustrated if you continue to look at the game that way. Look at the improvement you've seen from the young guys, and that's something you can get excited about.
You can definitely see it. This guy's right up my alley, Warren Sharp, Sharp Football Analytics, follows the National Football League. You can follow him at Sharp Football, and I clicked on the follow button today, Warren, because I love this stuff. I love analytics. I love looking at stuff and trying to figure out what I'm seeing in NFL football games. Give us a little feel for what you've seen so far the first 2 weeks this season.
Well, I appreciate you having me, Chris. I've seen a lot of offense. I've seen some explosive passing attacks that have actually led in some nice upset, outright upset victories for some underdog teams, teams that are willing to play a little bit more aggressive and higher variance football. And then I've seen some other teams, like we saw, unfortunately, on display with the Cowboys and the Giants, where we're seeing teams committed to the run on early downs, committed to trying to grind out efficiency, and they're not having nearly as much luck as the teams that are operating in a more analytically correct manner and throwing the football more often.
Warren, that's a great point, and it's something, honestly, that I've talked about on my show for a long time, and it seems like the Patriots were kind of at the forefront of, you know, being willing to go for it on fourth down, throwing 20 passes in a row to start a football game. And then we saw the Super Bowl last year. The Philadelphia Eagles out-Patriots because they go for it on fourth down and run a reverse. They go for it late in the football game to keep the ball away from New England. They win the Super Bowl doing that. And I would think watching that, every NFL team would start getting to the point where they understand that going for it on fourth down, not kicking field goals, taking chances, is the way to success in the NFL, is it not?
Well, yes, it's being aggressive when the situation is in your favor. It's not being conservative just for the sake of being conservative. It's playing to win games as opposed to playing not to lose them. And it actually becomes very evident when you start digging into the numbers which teams have that priority and which teams are just trying to get by without losing a game. There's far too many teams in the National Football League that attempt to stick with their own ideology of, this is who we are, let's just go out execute our opponent, as opposed to those teams who are willing to adapt everything they possibly can on both sides of the football to the weaknesses of their opponent. So it might be a team like the Patriots, you gave an example up at the top, where they go up against a team with a really good run defense. The Patriots might run the first series, they might have a couple of handoffs, and if they see that those handoffs are gaining 1.5 to 2.5 yards per carry, they're just going to abandon the run game more or less and throw, like you mentioned, possibly 20 passes in a row because they know it's in their best interest. Now, would a normal team game plan and strategize heading into that game? Look, we're just going to throw the ball every play. No, they wouldn't. But a smart team would realize if we can't run, we're not going to waste our time running. We're going to quickly adapt our game plan in game and start passing the football. So there, it is very obvious which teams are trying harder at doing this, and those are the teams that end up having a little bit more success. And unfortunately, the worst teams in the league are those less likely to be aggressive in pursuit of incorporating analytics because those coaches are in win now modes. They know that if they don't win this year, they might be out the door, and they think that they don't understand analytics enough to really pin their career on using analytics in what could be their last season.
Warren Sharp is with us. It's at Sharp Football. You definitely want to follow and get the insight from Warren Sharp. Great NFL stuff. All right, let me ask you this, Warren. I'm looking at the beginning of the season now, and I'm looking at 7 undefeated teams at the moment, and I think everyone would pretty much agree that the Rams are very good, the Chiefs are very good, and the Jaguars are very good. I don't know if you even need analytics for all of that. Those are obviously 3 very good teams. The other 4 undefeated teams, I'm not really sure about. Maybe none of them are good. I don't know what you think. But between Tampa Bay, Miami, Denver, Cincinnati, of those 4, are any of those teams doing the kind of things that you're talking about analytically that may lead them to more successful seasons as this thing goes along?
Well, the first one that definitely is being a lot more aggressive would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I don't think they're actually incorporating many analytical decisions into their process. I think they've just got an ultra-aggressive game plan. But they certainly are one of the teams that's actually looking to try to throw the football a lot on first downs. And the way that they've been surprising opposing teams is their depth of target on first down. They really are pushing the ball down the field. And this is actually something that the Detroit Lions started doing midway through the season last year, and it really helped explode their passing game, was to not just throw the ball, you know, 6 to 10 yards down the field on first down and try to get a completion. Many teams would rather run the football on first downs in the first quarter, in the first half of games. But what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are doing is they're actually throwing the ball deeper down the field. They're throwing the ball 20, 25 yards in the air down the field on these first down plays in the first half to start games. And that's really catching some of these opposing teams off guard. The Miami Dolphins they're just playing good all-around football. I don't think that they're doing anything extremely special in terms of their pass rates or anything like that that's helping them win games. If anything, they're a little bit more on the wrong side of the pendulum, which is they're a bit more run-heavy on first downs in the first half of games, whereas the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are about average. Denver is the most interesting team here because they are just so in flux with Case Keenum and what they're going to get out of him on a week-to-week basis. He's played two home games. Now he goes on the road for the first time this year. A big test out in Baltimore. But the interesting thing about Keenum is the offense and Vance Joseph, he is a very conservative coach. He wants to try to run the ball a lot. And last week in the first half of that game, they went extremely run heavy in the first half, and it got them nowhere. They had a ton of problems getting any type of productivity out of their first half rushing offense. And that's what Vance Joseph wanted to do because he felt Case Keenum threw a couple picks week one. He wanted to come in with a little bit more of a conservative strategy to start the week two game against the Oakland Raiders. The problem is it completely backfired and did not have any success at all. So what they decided to do in the second half, due to them being down on the scoreboard 12-0, is get more aggressive in the pass game, and they ended up remarkably coming back and winning that game. But if you look at what they did in the first half of that game in week one, where they led 17-10 at halftime, they went 63% pass. In the first half of the last game, they went 63% run. So they tried to run the ball, and it backfired. So I don't think that that's a team that is destined to continue this upward trajectory. I think all the teams you mentioned should have good seasons overall, but not great. Not many of these teams may not even make the postseason, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, things do change. We overreact to what we see for 2 weeks. Warren Sharp is with us. Sharp Football Analytics, following the NFL, giving us some of his insight. Last thing for me, Warren, here is I wish we had a little bit more time, but through 2 weeks, what team is struggling that we shouldn't be worried about, and which teams are struggling that should be really worried?
That's a good question. I think a team that's struggling right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers, that is a team that I guess we could be worried about because their defense isn't very good. But this offense is inevitably going to get back on track. The week one game against Cleveland, I mean, they were up 21-7 in that game. They let the Browns back in through five turnovers. I mean, a team that commits, I think it was six turnovers, but they lost the turnover battle by five. A team that commits and loses by -5 turnover margin should not even tie the game. They should have gotten their butts kicked in that game. So the fact that they tied shows something about that team. And then, of course, they just got outscored. I mean, you could not even punt the ball against Pat Mahomes in that week two game in Pittsburgh, or you're going to lose because every single time down the field, he's scoring a touchdown. The defense is something that could come along, but I'm not, you know, I'm still like the overall ceiling. I don't know how high it is. I think a team that's struggling right now that won't get back on track is the Seattle Seahawks. That's a team that invested in the run game, brought in a run-oriented coordinator in Brian Schottenheimer to try to fix this run game and get back on track. And the run game is not actually what needs fixing the most. It's the pass game. It's the defense. And, of course, they're not having a lot of success running because rushing is difficult with an offensive line like they've got. But you're not going to fix that by spending a first-round pick on a first-round draft pick on a rookie running back, which they did. And now Pete Carroll's coming out today and saying that we need to run the ball better. We need to run the ball more often, which is completely not the correct strategy. So I think that's a team at 0-2 is on the bad side and not going to get back on track this year.
Warren, very interesting stuff. I hope we're able to catch up with you as the season goes along and check in from time to time. I will continue the follow on Twitter and check out at Sharp Football. Good stuff, entertaining stuff, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Chris.
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwen and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
You guys ready for the first mistake-free Big Five of all time?
Setting yourself up for failure.
I know I am. I know I am. So let's get
certainly ready for it. I'm not sure we can produce it.
Okay. Good point, Chris. Very good point. An update. The PGA Tour we talked about yesterday and how they're doing a little bit of changes and all that. But they're going to change it up a lot, actually. These are massive changes they announced today. In the Tour Championship next year, the player in first will start the tournament at 10 under. Then the person in second on the FedEx Cup points list will start at 8 under. Then third, 7 under, so on and so forth until all the guys are there and the last guys start with even. What do you guys think of that? That's kind of crazy, right?
Sounds desperate to me.
That does. 10 under?
10 under
like
for the guy.
Going like World Wrestling Association on us now. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, it's very confusing as it is right now.
Right.
And that's the biggest problem I think they have. And I think any rules that they're going to put in that are going to make it more confusing and then not even, I mean, the trying to level the playing field by giving certain guys different scores at the beginning of the round, I think is just not. That just doesn't sound like golf. That's like that's like going into the baseball playoffs and saying, well, the Red Sox have a better record than the A's, so we're going to give them 1.5 runs in every game at the beginning since they're a better team.
Yeah, it's
that just doesn't
really
it
crazy.
Doesn't sound like golf. It
right.
Sounds like they're really reaching here, Scraby.
I mean, honestly, it makes it more confusing. I mean, starting the guy who finishes in first starts 10 under now. Like,
it's crazy.
Why? Like, I don't understand that at all. I think they're actually doing the sport a disservice by making it more confusing, honestly. I don't know that I like these changes.
Yeah, neither do I.
Now that they're officially out.
I actually know I don't like these changes.
All right.
Not even something that I think.
Get started.
Number five.
Red Sox.
Oh, so that wasn't even. Wait, that
no,
wasn't
no,
even
that was
the first
an update.
One?
That was an update.
Five and a half.
That was an update. That was an update. Because the first question's a doozy. So, I mean, it's going to take you guys maybe 2 seconds to answer. But number five, the Red Sox fans, we know they're pretty crazy. And with a win tonight, the Red Sox could clinch the AL East. They had a banner made and everything for it. But the banner somehow was lost in transit, and some good old Sox fans found it on the road. Have you guys heard of this yet?
I saw this briefly, yes.
Okay, so listen to the guys who found the banner during a Boston Globe video.
We're driving on McGrath Highway in Somerville, and I noticed a couple cars swinging, like moving to the right, and we seen something in the street. And he's like, Louie, what is that? What is it? I'm like, I don't know. What is it? So I ran across the highway to grab it. We brought it in the car. We had no idea what it was. First thing I said, this belongs to the Red Sox. This is for Fenway Park.
Yeah.
Like, how do we have this? Like, nobody made this. This belongs to the park. I'm thinking that they hang it off the Green Monster.
Yep.
We want to give it back to them because it belongs to them, and it doesn't belong to us.
Yep.
But in reciprocation, we would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game.
Yes.
Or we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
Hey, the reciprocation.
Oh, my goodness. That's classic.
That is classic. What?
That is so funny.
Sox
there's no
fan.
Words to describe it.
I mean, they went on for another minute, but they are looking for playoff tickets, as you heard. I have the answer to the question because this just came out like maybe 5 minutes ago. So what do you guys think? Tony, let's start with you. Do the Red Sox deserve to give these guys anything for giving their banner back?
Do they deserve?
Or, I'm sorry. Do they need to give these guys any? Do the guys deserve something from the Red Sox for giving the banner back? There's the mistake.
No, you're good. You're good. That's a difficult question because on one hand, I feel like, no, the Red Sox don't own it. They paid for that thing already. It's theirs. But on the other hand, if I'm looking at it from their standpoint, this thing could sit up nicely. No, it couldn't. They probably don't own a home that's big enough to host that whole thing. Because if it's supposed to go across the big monster, that's a pretty big overlay right there.
Yes.
So, you know what? Here's my answer. Yes, the Red Sox should get them some playoff tickets. They did find it. They are the Samaritans that have decided to negotiate to give it back, even though they already claimed that it's theirs and they should have it. They should get something for it. I think it'll be a cool story to see these guys at a playoff game. I'm sure they sound like they would be great characters on
TV,
too.
Chris, what do you think?
Hilarious. They are hilarious. I think they should not only get some playoff tickets, but they should get some food for that dog that was barking in the background.
Sounded like a Pomeranian or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was annoying.
The Red Sox need to provide a little Alpo for their dog. That's just a funny story, and it's a funny clip.
Yeah, and so the update for your answer is that the Red Sox gave them nothing.
Nothing.
Oh,
nothing.
Really? I did not see that happen.
It just came out a couple minutes ago. I'm glad I saw it because they gave them nothing. That's pretty brutal.
But they got the banner back?
They got the Red Sox got the banner back. The guys go home with nothing.
Wow. That's kind of weak.
It is kind of weak.
Not even the dog food?
Not even the dog food. How could they do that to Mr.
Man,
I don't know.
I'm disappointed in the Red Sox now.
Number four.
Yasiel Puig has had a really bad go at it with his house being burglarized. In fact, so bad he has been robbed 4 times in the last 2 years and 2 times in the last month. And one happened last night while he was at the game playing the Rockies. So, Chris, let's start with you. Is this just a case of bad luck, or do you think there's something else going on there that has this keep happening to him?
I have no idea, and I don't want to. I honestly don't want to guess on something like this because this is kind of scary stuff.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, think about this. I mean, for all of us, I mean, when we're out doing our job in the public eye, the public knows we're out doing our job. So, honestly, these kind of little things scare me a little bit, even personally. I would think that Tony would feel it even more so than I do. So I'm not going to hazard a guess as to what's going on here. Obviously, Yasiel Puig, in this particular case, needs to beef up security around his house to protect his stuff and his loved ones. So to me, this is a very scary type of story.
Well, now you say have me scared. So, Tony, what do you think?
I agree with Chris. I mean, I can imagine walking, you know, pulling up to your driveway and seeing your house broken in one time, let alone twice in the same month. So this is a scary situation. I don't know. I don't think it's right to speculate what may be happening. Clearly, they're casing his house and know his schedule. It's a public knowledge of what his schedule is, when he's going on the road. The interesting thing is both times it's happened, he's been in L.A.
Yeah, right?
Like they could have taken advantage of this when he was on the road. Clearly, they seem to be waiting till he's home to make this happen. I mean, this is a scary situation. I hope somehow.
I would like to, honestly, Tony, not to interrupt you. I'd like to see the Dodgers jump in here.
Yeah,
and
I was
going to
say Major League Baseball. Somebody step in because
I mean, they've
this
got
is,
plenty of security avenues that they can they can help Yasiel Puig. I think in this case, I don't care what you think about Yasiel Puig. He's not my favorite player, but I don't like this kind of stuff happening.
Yeah, I mean, no, you guys actually talked me into being really scared for him. That is a little scary.
Yeah.
Number three.
It's a good thing we had to talk you into it.
Well, I've seen too many movies, I think.
Yeah, because you were just going to make fun of him.
There was like I was going to be like, yeah, there's like a caper going on or something. All right. Chargers defensive tackle Corey Legit is suing his former trainer for $15 million in damages due to lost wages, pain and suffering caused by a positive test for PEDs. Legit claims that Canadian bobsledder Ian Danny was injected him with a high dose of over-the-counter anti-inflammatory following a Chargers game last season. But instead of doing what he said he was going to do, he injected him with a banned substance. Now, Danny doesn't have a license to perform injections in California, but we'll start with you, Tony. Let's. Do you think the athlete is ultimately responsible for what goes in their body?
Hell yes. Absolutely. Because ultimately, I don't know anybody that's going to let somebody stick a needle in them. First of all, that we can stop right there. I don't know anybody besides a doctor. I don't know anybody who lets somebody stick a needle in them. Secondly, I mean, aren't you going to be pretty skeptical to what's going in your body? You should be, especially for an athlete who plays any of the major sports where there's drug testing in. This is on Corey Legion, is what, at the end of the day, he's the one who's responsible for what goes in his body. He can sue whoever he wants. He's the one responsible, ultimately.
Chris?
I honestly think, Scraby, he should have changed the name of the lawsuit, and it should basically be, I am suing myself for being stupid, $15 million, and all the pain and suffering I caused myself. I mean, Tony's right. You can't just let some guy you have no idea who
it
is.
Not to mention, why is your trainer a bobsledder? Former bobsledder.
No, he's an active.
With?
I think he's active.
Active bobsledder?
Yeah. I think he's an active Canadian bobsledder.
Seems a little out of place.
Why are bobsledders cheating, too? Right. I don't know. It's another question I have. They only have to run from, like, here to the end, of the corner.
Well, we saw in the movie.
Their head a little bit.
We saw in the movie Cool Runnings that, you know, Irv Blitzer was a cheater.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that the bobsledders are cheating because everybody seems to cheat in every sport, but I'm not letting Corey Leggett off the hook on this one.
Isn't this what kind of happened with Antonio Gates, too? He said he maybe not got injected with something, but he did take supplements that were tainted or whatever.
I really don't remember because I don't keep track of it anymore because as soon as somebody starts speaking about the fact that they didn't know what was going into their body I stop paying attention because I don't really believe any of these guys, even guys I like Antonio Gates. I almost always side with the fact that they probably were trying to get away with something and got caught.
Number two.
NFL Hall of Famers made big news yesterday when they said they would not show up to the ceremonies unless they got medical benefits and a yearly revenue-sharing salary from the NFL. Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson clarified how much he is looking for in this clip obtained by TMZ.
If it was up to me, I mean, I think every Hall of Famer would get about $300,000 a year. That would be, I think, a proper number. And my main thing is because the pension is so bad. I mean, if the pension was right, that's fine. I mean, make it, if you want to say pension, make it a pension, but make it a correct pension. Go out, kind of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball, if you play 10 years, you get $222,000 the rest of your life. I mean, that's a good pension. But football, you know, if you play 10 years, matter of fact, I can give you a good example. Jojo LaMalia, I think he played 12 years. His pension is $2,300 a month. That's what he told me. I mean, it's such a disparity. That's what it is.
All right, you guys heard Eric Dickerson. Chris, what do you think?
Well, on the surface, I kind of agree with Eric Dickerson, but as I dig into this and just try to read between the lines of what he's saying and reading what happened yesterday, I still feel, and talking with Arash Merkazi, who was on the show with us yesterday, I feel like Eric Dickerson is not really representing all ex-NFL players. He's representing Eric Dickerson. He's representing, he said, Hall of Famers should get this money. It's a little bit of a problem because I think the players deserve some sort of compensation and they should have worked out a better deal the way baseball players worked out their deal. And I would like to see these guys get taken care of, but it doesn't sound like all the current and former NFL players are on the same page in what I was able to learn yesterday. So what Eric Dickerson says here is a little bit sketchy to me.
Tony, what do you think?
I said it yesterday, too. I think ultimately what Eric Dickerson is asking for, he's not wrong. I think the players deserve something. I mean, he mentioned the baseball players, which is my point, right? He mentioned the baseball players. They play 10 years. They get, what did he say, $225,000, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
The issue, though, is that the players had to do – they had to sacrifice together as a unit, and that's the superstars, that's the stars, that's the average players, that's the below average players, that's even the players that were 4A guys who were back and forth, right? It's everybody is in the same boat, and that's how they negotiated. The problem with the NFL and the NFL players is you got the Hall of Famers, they seem to be in one boat. You have former players who weren't Hall of Famers seem to be in another boat. Then you have the current players. They seem to be in a boat. And then you got the superstars of the current players that seem to be in another boat. So until they get on the same boat, they are never going to be negotiating from a place of strength. They're going to be negotiating from a place of weakness because the owners ultimately know, listen, no matter what they say and no matter how much merit it actually has, we know that eventually they'll pull themselves apart. And that's where their issue lies.
Look at all of the stoppages in baseball and in football history. In baseball history, they canceled the World Series because the players would not give in until they got what they wanted. They sacrificed a year and a half. Football players, every time they've gone out on strike, half of them come back before the strike is over. So Tony's comment really carries a lot of weight here, and I agree with him. I'd love to see every former NFL player get a nice check and some pension because they certainly earned it. But until they get in the same boat, they're going to sink.
Number one.
And the number one story of the day is Maroon 5 is going to be the Super Bowl halftime show. What do you guys think? You into Maroon 5? Let's go. Let's start with you, Chris. Are you into Maroon 5?
I am not. No. I don't dislike Maroon 5, but I don't own any of their CDs. I don't have any of their songs on my mix. Can I call it a mixtape, or how outdated is that? Pretty bad.
No, you can call it mixtape.
Mixtape's okay.
They still do mixtapes.
I'm not. I don't think. Look, I understand the NFL has been, you know, still reacting to what happened. What,
now, like 10, 25 years ago
with Justin Timberlake
still
and Janet Jackson. Yeah, I think, you know. Look, they had Justin Timberlake. I think he was it last year or the year before. He did just fine. I think it's time that the NFL gets a little more hip again. And pushes the envelope, and Maroon 5 is not doing it for me.
Tony?
Yeah, I won't be watching the halftime show.
What?
Sure. I'll be going back to watch the commercials in between the halftime show, but my wife will watch. I won't be. I might get my little quick nap in at that point.
You know, a couple years ago when Beyonce did the Super Bowl, like it was crazy how many women really wanted to watch the Super Bowl halftime show for Beyonce. This is exactly what they're doing. Getting guys
for women,
yeah. Getting guys' wives to watch.
It is fine, but I don't think it's getting any more women to watch the game because my wife doesn't come into the room until she comes in to go. How much time till halftime? That's about pretty much all she's concerned with. So,
all right, good one today, guys.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news. You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.